This is the Flip Empire Show with Alex Pardo, episode 58.
Yeah, the reason why there's fear around the pitch is because they think of it as a pitch.
Yep.
When the reality is, if you have something that you genuinely believe that will be beneficial to them, then it's not a pitch. It's simply a conversation, and you're learning more about them to see if what you have or will have truly is beneficial.
Welcome to the Flip Empire Show, bringing you the interviews, strategies, and insights for smart real estate investors. Prepare to dive into the minds of real estate's heavy hitters and gain the cutting-edge expertise you need to scale and grow your real estate empire. Your success and freedom starts now with your host, Alex Pardo.
Hey, my friends, welcome back. It's fantastic to have you on another Flip Empire show here. And if you're tuning in for the first time, first off, I really appreciate you taking the time to listen in. I really know that you're going to get a lot of value out of it. My name is Alex Pardo. I'm the host here of the Flip Empire show. And what we do on these masterclasses, I'm always striving to get the most successful entrepreneurs and real estate investors out there, people that are crushing it in their business, to come on here and, you know, reveal what they're doing in their business, you know, give us a peek into their business model and what's working for them. And really the goal of the show is, you know, by the end of it, we always want to leave you with at least a couple of action items that you can implement in your business so that you can see and experience success. Now, you know, if you've kind of heard me on the show before, you've heard me talk about the speed of implementation. And that's one of the biggest things that separates people that are successful from the people that kind of struggle to gain momentum and progress is how quickly are you going to take something that you're about to listen to here in the show and implement it in your business. That's really what's gonna make you stand out. So just to kind of give you guys an idea and give you a little bit of context, I got a really special guest on the show today by the name of Joe Fairless. And just so you kind of guys have an idea as to how and why Joe's on the show, is we travel in a lot of the same circles and we know a lot of the same, you know, we know a lot of the thought leaders and educators in the real estate investing community. And I kept hearing Joe's name coming up as somebody who was doing big things. And so I did a little bit of research. I asked a mutual friend to put us in contact. And I quickly realized that Joe and I have probably even a lot more in common than he might know. And I found out that, you know, one of his aspirations years ago, which was mine as well, was to kind of climb the corporate ladder. You know, if you guys have heard my story, you know that out of college, I graduated, I went to go work for GE's financial management program. And I thought I wanted to be the CFO and the CEO of a large Fortune 500 company. And similar to Joe, you know, right out of college, I think he graduated from Texas Tech. He worked for an ad agency in New York City, and he rose the ranks. And I think he became the youngest VP before the age of 30. One of the other things that we had in common is, you know, we realized that life is too short to be working for someone else and to be doing something that you're not passionate about. So he started learning more about real estate investing. He took action. You know, he purchased, I think it was 4 single family homes by the time that he decided to leave the agency in December 2012. And he's just been crushing it, doing big things since then. One of the main things that we're going to be focusing on today's show, and I'm going to bring him on in a second here, is how he got from owning 4 single family properties to starting Fairless Investing. And within 6 months, he raised over $1 million in private money and closed on a 168 unit apartment complex, which is extremely impressive. And I know that, you know, a lot of people get, there's a lot of fear associated with getting involved with, you know, commercial real estate because of the size of the deals and the numbers. And today he controls over $54 million worth of real estate. So obviously he's somebody that we can learn a lot from. And that's really what I want to do, is I want to bridge the gap between, you know, if you're listening in, you're either getting started in this business or you're wholesaling and you're doing, you know, a lot of deals on a monthly basis. How can we add more zeros to the back of your paycheck? And that's really what Joe's going to share with us. So having said that, Joe, man, I appreciate you taking the time to hop on the show here.
My pleasure. What a wonderful introduction, Alex. And I didn't know we had so many things in common. I knew we had a lot. I knew we had some, but now the more you talk, the more I realize we do have a lot in common, and looking forward to having our conversation and sharing some info with your listeners.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So listen, why don't we start here? I don't know if you can maybe fill in some of the gaps of what maybe I didn't cover in the introduction. I talked about how, you know, you started buying some single families while you were still working at the ad agency, and then how you quickly transitioned into a really large deal. Why don't we kind of, you know, if you can fill in some of the gaps, how you got started, and then we can get into how people can jump from single family into commercial and specifically multifamily units.
Well, jumping from single family to multifamily takes, it just takes you making a decision to make that jump and then following the proven path that others take in order to get there. I would say that the first thing you want to know is what are your goals? Because whenever I was investing in single family homes, I ended up buying four total, as you mentioned earlier. And I realized that I was making $250 a month from each of them. But whenever a tenant moved out, it was $5,000 to fix all the stuff that needed to be fixed: paint, carpet, miscellaneous maintenance issues. And that would just wipe out all of my profit for a year and a half. And I was like, wait a second. And by the way, people make money in single family homes, and they make millions of dollars in single family homes, but I wasn't, and I didn't want to continue to pursue that, because not only the reason I just stated, but also there's a lot of paperwork involved for the home, and in terms of how I was looking at it, from, you know, making sure you got your insurance paid every year, and the insurance company doesn't do automatic withdrawal, although I'm sure you can set it up.
Yeah.
Just profit and loss statements that I had to review. It was just a lot of work, plus to find the thing, a lot of work for little to no return, except for when the mortgage gets paid off, and then you've got the big benefit of having a lot of cash flow. Mm-hmm. So I looked at that, and I was like, okay, I got to scale, and that's what that was my reason why, and that was the goal that I made, because I was like, I'm not reaching my goals fast enough. So I started studying multifamily, and that's what someone who's wanting to get into multifamily from single family, you just got to study it. You got to know,
that's right,
what are you looking for, and now how do you get there? Well, you get there by listening to your podcast, listen to my podcast, The Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show, listening to other people's podcasts, and then also reading books, attending meetups, going to different conferences around your market, and hopefully around, you know, the region that you live in. Once you do that, at that point, you're going to be able to have some basic working knowledge of what to do. And then it's a matter of knowing how to run the numbers on the deals. Now, don't run the numbers for the purpose or intention of buying the place, because unless you have the money, you're not going to buy the place. You're just running the numbers, and you're getting acclimated to the process. And that's what a lot of people get confused about. Excuse me. They try to run the numbers and then go make offers on places when they don't have the money, because they're using a single family mentality on multifamily purchases.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't have the money and you start making offers and then you can't deliver, the commercial brokers are going to stop sending you deals, and you're going to hurt your reputation. And it's a very small world for commercial real estate. And you want to make sure that you maintain your reputation to the highest level so that you can continue to do deals. So what you need to do, and what I did, well, let me say, the first deal, I did it all wrong, by the way. I did everything I'm saying right now. I did the opposite on my first deal. But now, you mentioned $54 million. It's actually, I forgot to update it. It's now $85 million.
Nice, man.
worth of real estate. And soon to be a little bit more when we do a closing in the next 2 months. So I've since evolved my process is the point. And what you want to do is you'll want to find the investors, if you are raising money, find the private money first after after you know what you're doing from an underwriting standpoint. Then you find the private investors. Then you go find the deal to actually make offers on. So the one mistake, like I mentioned, that a lot of people make starting out is they want to go find a deal, and then because they've heard on forums or on other shows, you go find a deal, the money will follow. Well, that perhaps is true, but it is a character building experience. I'll tell you that if you go with that approach, and I don't recommend it. I recommend that you know what you're talking about through underwriting. Then you go talk to investors about the type of business that you're doing, not about a specific opportunity, but a type of business that you're doing. And then you go find the deal once you have investors who are interested in investing in the types of deals that you talk to them about.
Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. And I, by the way, I completely agree with you that on a couple different things. Number one is, you know, single family investing commercial investing requires a completely different mindset shift than what, most wholesalers and investors do on the single family front. And you alluded to, you know, that's a common mistake that people make. And the second thing is, you know, you talked about the first step, if you really want to jump into this arena, is complete and total immersion. You know, Tony Robbins talks about that a lot. I think one example he gave is if you want to learn a foreign language, the quickest, most efficient way to do it is to immerse yourself in that culture and that community. And the same applies to really anything that you want to learn about and build a business on. So that's the first step. And just kind of to recap what you just said, Joe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that's the first step is total immersion. Step two is understand how to evaluate the deals and the underwriting process. And that's one of the things I'd like you to elaborate on in here in a second. Three is the private money. Go find investors to raise the capital. And then four, go searching for the deals. And you're saying most people, that fourth step is really what they do first.
Yeah, you nailed it. And if we even want to get a little bit more detailed, and I don't want to overwhelm everyone who's listening with the entire process in granular detail, but just to add a little bit more color to the process, first is you total immersion, exactly like you said. Second is you know how to run the numbers. Third is you identify one to two markets and you identify why you like those markets. What I like to do is I'd like to put together a top 10 list of reasons why I like the market. And that top 10 list is based on some very simple things like job diversity, job growth, supply and demand, and any miscellaneous features that are unique to that market. For example, if there's a Barnett Shale under Dallas-Fort Worth, you've got some natural resources that can be drawn upon and help with the economy. Or if you're in Jacksonville and you got a big old port, then that's something to note as well.
Yeah.
So once you identify one to two markets, at that point, you actually build a brand. And building a brand sounds very, very vague in general. So I'll be specific. When you build a brand, you create a website, you have a name, a company name, and you have a logo, and you have a business card. That's it. Once you create a brand, then you go talk to investors, because if you talk to investors before you have an online presence, they're going to search you and they'll be like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, Joe was talking to me about multifamily, but shoot, I don't see anything on the internet about him. And I don't know if he's really serious about it. I know he hasn't bought an apartment community yet. So, I mean, sure. Yeah, I'll entertain it, but I know he's not serious and I won't treat it that way.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a website and you have a presentation to share with them, whether or not they look at the presentation does not matter. It's just about having it from a perception standpoint. And although it would be better if they actually look at the presentation.
Yeah, of course.
then once you build a brand, then you do your investor outreach. And how that works with your investors is and I have a spreadsheet that I put together, and I'd be happy to share it with your listeners. Just
that'd be awesome.
Yep. Email me info@joefairless.com. And the spreadsheet and this is the exact spreadsheet I use with my investor database. Here it is. I'll describe it, and then you can email me, and you can ask to receive it. Tell them that you heard me on Alex's show. So one column is first name. The other column is last name. Another is low range. Another is high range. Another is miscellaneous, and then I have the mailing address, but we don't necessarily have to have that. And most important is network. It's going to say network, and network means how they know you, because the approach that we take when we create an investor list is we write down all the people that we know. If we don't think we know a lot of people, then look in our phone, right?
That's right.
Or look on LinkedIn, look on Facebook. And if you don't have 50 people among all those connections, then this is not your business.
That's right.
You shouldn't be doing this.
And my guess would be 99 out of 100 people will have way more than 50 people.
Agreed. I second that guess.
Yeah.
So we list out first name, last name, network, how we know them, low range, high range of what we think they'll invest, and fill in that spreadsheet. Well, once you list out 50 people, take a look at it before you do any outreach. Take a look at it and see who are, in your opinion, the most influential people within each of the networks. For example, on my first deal where I hadn't raised a penny before, I looked at the different networks of people I knew. One was the Texas Tech Alumni Advisory Board. One was people who I worked with in my advertising at advertising agencies in New York City. One was people on my flag football team. One was people on my softball team. And I identified the most influential person who I had a good relationship with. And I reached out to that person first. And if they showed interest, then what I did is I said, hey, Alex, I know it sounds like you and I hit it off on this call, and this is something of interest to you. Would you mind if I also mention that you and I talked to so and so, who's also on the softball team? And you'd say, yeah, sure, that's fine. You can tell him or her we talked. And then you go to that person, you say, Alex and I talked, and you know we thought this might be something that you'd be interested in hearing as well. Boom, you already got a warm lead into them and into the conversation. And it happened on my first deal where the person who invested the most amount of money said to me, well, if so-and-so is interested in the deal, then yeah, I know he's financially responsible. So sure, I'd love to hear it. And they investing the most out of anyone. Mm-hmm. So take a look at all the people in your network and then be strategic about how you do the outreach within each of those networks.
Okay. What is that conversation? You know, you kind of talked about the intro to that conversation. So let's say somebody on your flag football team, you know, you identify the most influential person on your team. What does that conversation sound like? Like, so, you know, we're talking about first approaching your warm network. And what I want to kind of give, you know, people listening in now is, you know, there's a lot of fear associated with the quote unquote pitch, right? So how can we make it so that we can eliminate that barrier? And what does that conversation sound like?
Yeah, the reason why there's fear around the pitch is because they think of it as a pitch.
Yep.
When the reality is, if you have something that you genuinely believe that will be beneficial to them, then it's not a pitch. It's simply a conversation. And you're learning more about them to see if what you have or will have truly is beneficial. And if it is, then you genuinely want to help them out and yep. make their life better. So that's the approach that we take. And now I'll get very tactical. how that conversation flows is as follows. Let's just role play. You ready?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it.
Okay. Hey, Alex, how's it going? I sent you the info with the company overview prior to the call. Hope you're doing well. Did you have a chance to take a look at it?
Yeah, man. Yeah, I did, man. It's interesting. Do me a favor. Tell me, there's obviously a lot I don't know about this, but it piqued my interest. So tell me a little bit more about it.
I definitely will. And what would be helpful, just to give me some more context, because I want to make sure we're making the best use of our time together. I'd love to learn more about your background in investing, and then, you know, just a little specifically about some investments that have worked and haven't worked. Now let's pause right there. And this conversation, we don't have to go through the whole thing,
yep,
but that's what I would do. I would learn more about the investor, their background, how they got to this point, and what's worked and what hasn't worked. And I would listen to the words, and I do listen to the words that they use to describe what's worked and what hasn't worked. And if applicable, I'd apply those words to what we're doing on multifamily syndication.
Got it.
For example, if you were to say, you know, I look for something that gets at least a 10% cash on cash return, because that's what I get with my other business. And I don't want to put up, I don't want to have a lot of risk, personal risk, then I would mention and I would address those things about multifamily syndication, how it's projected that the returns will be higher than 10% on most deals. Every deal is unique. And I would also mention how there's risk in any investment, but the risk is mitigated through buying a tangible asset as well as buying a performing business, which is a apartment community, while increasing the revenue through value add strategies. Mm-hmm. And I'd also talk about how as a limited partner, you would not have any personal risk other than the investment dollars that you put into the deal, because the general partners are the ones who are signing on the mortgage and the note. So after we talk about you, and by the way, the goal is for me to talk 25%, you to talk 75%.
Yep. Listen more than you speak.
Exactly. Totally listen. And take notes. Every call I have, I take tons of notes. And then when I talk to them again, I just open up the Word document. I date it the day that we're talking, and I just take notes again. And I have notes for every single conversation that I have with investors, and I'm able to reference previous conversations as soon as they call me, because I open up the Word document. Mm-hmm. And what we'll do is, so we'll listen to you, we'll engage. And by the way, some investors, they just want to get into it, like, okay, blah blah blah. My name, yeah, great to talk to you too, Joe. Let's just get into it. I don't have much time. Okay, great. And then I would just roll into it. I would say, screw me learning more about them. He or she just wants me to get down to business, and I will. So you kind of have to assess as things are going, but generally you'll want to have them talk a lot more. Once you tell me what your goals are and what success looks like and doesn't look like, then I would tell you high level what the business is. Uh-huh. And then at the end, I'd say if I find something that meets your goals of 10% while mitigating risk along the way, would you like me to share it with you? And what do you think everyone says?
Yeah, yes, of course.
Of course, yeah, of course. If you find something that reaches the goals that I just told you, Joe, and then, yes, I'd love for you to share it with me. Mm-hmm. And then I say something along the lines of just so I know what type of range that you're in when we find something. What's the investment range that you're looking at? And then they might say, I don't know, it depends on the minimum. They might say, I don't know, it depends on the deal. They might say 25,000. They might say 500,000. They might say I have 300,000 in IRA. They might say, I don't know.
Yeah.
What's your maximum? And that will give you in the spreadsheet that you have, that will give you the information to do low and high range. And the reason why this is so important is because what you and I talked about earlier, we have to find the investor dollars verbal interest first before we go look at deals. That way we can go confidently make offers on deals. So a good rule of thumb would be when you have the low range column totaled to 30% more than what you need on a deal, then you're good to go on making offers because you've got a conservative, you're being very conservative with what you can raise on the deal, and you're going to be able to likely reach that depending on the type of deal.
Got it. So let's just say, to boil it down to numbers, let's say on the low range, you have $130,000 on there, on that spreadsheet, right? So now based on that, is that what's going to determine what you would suggest the size of deal or the size of apartment units that people go? So no sense in looking at a 200 unit. You know, if you can only raise 130 grand, it's an obvious statement. Don't go wasting your time looking at 200 unit buildings, but maybe focus on, you know, a 5 to 10 unit building, for example. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what I'd say. Unless there's partners that you have, or if you're in a program or something where you can bring a deal to someone and then they partner with you and you bring some investor dollars and they bring the majority of the investor dollars.
Okay.
Otherwise, if you're flying solo and you're doing this on your own, then yeah, that's the approach. Otherwise, you know, if you don't do that and you bite off more than you can chew, you're going to risk ruining your reputation and not pulling through on the deal and spending time and money on something that you can't close.
Yeah, yeah. And when you're coming up with your list, your network, right? When you're documenting all the people you know, you have no idea what their financial situation is, or even if they're interested in investing in a deal, or are you trying to?
Okay. I do know if they're interested in investing, because what I do is I do an initial email just talking about what I'm up to and how what I'm doing I think could benefit them.
Got it.
And then I say, would you like to jump on a call on this day to discuss? And then if they reply and say, yeah, sure, then I send them the confirmation with a PDF of the presentation so that we don't have to go through it slide by slide whenever we jump on a call. And then we jump on the call.
Okay. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's an important distinction. I wasn't sure if you were just approaching everyone you knew or if you were, you know, kind of putting out a feeler out there, which makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joe, really quick, man, I got just a couple more questions here and then let's kind of wind it down. And I know this is a beast of a topic to cover on such a short podcast here, but I really want to just kind of pique people's interest and, you know, give them the behind the scenes look as to what a successful multifamily investing business looks like. And obviously with multifamily investing, you know, one of the biggest benefits is you have economies of scale. You know, you have everything under one roof, or in certain cases, it could be multiple roofs, but it's very different owning 20 single family homes versus owning a 50 unit apartment building. And I'm sure you would agree with that. What are some of the pitfalls and mistakes you've seen investors make when they decide to get into commercial real estate? Let's assume that they're following the steps that you've outlined, right? Total immersion, understand how to evaluate the deals, go find private money, and then go find deals. Within that framework, what are some of the biggest mistakes that maybe even that you've made that you can kind of share with people so that they can navigate those waters better?
Well, you are correct, my friend. This is a whole nother podcast episode on mistakes. It's funny, or I don't know about funny, but it's a coincidence that I am speaking at a Think Realty conference in Atlanta pretty soon.
Awesome.
And my topic is on the top 10 mistakes I've made as a multifamily syndicator. So I'll just name one.
Yeah.
I've got 10. I'll name one. Let's see. The difference between economic and physical occupancy. Whenever I was looking at my first property, I was told, oh, yeah, we're at 98% occupancy. I was like, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, 98%. We can even be at 100 if you want us at closing. You know what? Yeah, let's do 100. Why not? You know, it's like someone offering you, you know, mocha cheesecake, and then you eat it, and they're like, "Well, we have lava cake too." Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? Right?
Yeah, why not? Yeah. Well, the difference between physical occupancy, people who live in an apartment building, and economic, people who pay to live in an apartment building, is significant, or can be significant. Therefore, we have to pay attention to the economic occupancy. Screw physical occupancy, doesn't matter. It's about economic occupancy, people who are paying to live there. Mm-hmm. So when you hear brokers say, hey, it's 95% occupied, so what? I don't care. What's the economic occupancy? Because that's going to really tell us the story.
That's right. That's right. And what do you have a kind of a quick along the lines of, you know, the numbers and the economics of the deal? Do you have kind of a quick and dirty way to look at, let's just say, a 20 unit building? Obviously, you need the financials. Do you have kind of a quick and dirty way to say, to look at the numbers without doing a super deep dive, you know, into evaluating and the underwriting process? You know, wholesalers are familiar with the Mayo formula, the maximum allowable offer. Is there something along those lines that within a couple of minutes you can look at a deal and you can get a pretty good ballpark as to whether this deal would be good or not?
I look at a couple things if I'm forced to be within the parameters you just described. And one is price per unit. So I'll know what's the price per unit that they're asking and what are the rents for those units. Mm-hmm. If I know that, then you can do some similar math that you would do on the single family home, where you just divide the purchase price by the rent. And if you're at 1-2%, then you know you're in a decently cash flowing property. If it's less than 1%, then you know you got something that's not as good. And if above 2%, then what's going on? It's raining dollars, but yeah. What type of area is it, or what's up with this? What's up with the deal? Another way to look at it is simply knowing what the cap rate is in the area and knowing what the effective gross income is, taking 60%, 50-60%, allocating that towards expenses, mm-hmm. and then you can get the valuation by taking the net operating income, which would be the effective gross income minus the expenses. So then you got your NOI, net operating income, divide that by the cap rate for the area, and that's the rough value.
Yep. Got it. Awesome, man. Well, here's the last 1-2 questions for you, because I want you to let people know where they can reach out to you. But before you do that, rewind the clock to when you were 20, 25 years old. What's the advice you'd give yourself that can help people as they get into, or, you know, even if they're in a commercial real estate investing, how they can build a business, start acquiring more units, and really scale the business? Along those lines, what's the one piece of advice you'd give yourself if you rewind the clock 10, 15, 20 years?
Find the people who are successfully doing what you want to do, and don't just learn from them, but work with them on their deals by either bringing investors to the deals or finding off-market deals. So in addition to paying them as consultants, slide into their deals through some way that you're adding value. Mm-hmm. That way you can build your track record alongside with them, and then eventually stand on your own 2 feet.
That's powerful. Love it, man. Well, Joe, man, it's been awesome having you on the show. I know you mentioned earlier that you're the host of a very successful podcast, Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever. I was fortunate, if you guys are not aware, I was fortunate to be on there not too long ago. If you check it out, I believe it was episode 771. So definitely check out Joe's podcast. Where is that the best place to connect and reach out to you, Joe?
Yeah, absolutely. If you just go in the App Store and search my name, Joe Fairless, the podcast will come up. Or if you want that free money raising spreadsheet that I was talking about, I'd be happy to send that to you. Just email me info@joefairless.com. Mention you heard me on Alex's podcast and just say, can you send me the money raising spreadsheet?
Cool. Yeah. And what we'll do, Joe, if you don't mind, is we'll also add that as a link in the resources in the show notes page on flipempire.com for this particular episode, if that's cool with you.
Perfect.
Awesome. Well, Joe, I appreciate it. You know, if you're listening in again, thank you for the time. And like I alluded to at the top of the show, is figure out what resonated here that you heard, what hit home with you. If you've never done a commercial deal, the first step is again, total immersion, and just take one or two things and speed of implementation. You know, how quickly are you going to put it to use, and just take action, fail forward. And then you're going to see, you're going to be in a completely different place 12, 24 months down the line if you start taking the action now to get to where you want to go. So I'll leave you with that. Joe, I appreciate the time. I know you and I will stay in contact. And thanks again, man.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Take care. Bye.
That's all for this episode of the Flip Empire Show. But we have you covered with even more expertise and resources on our website. Text EMPIRE to 67076 or head over to flipempire.com to join the newsletter and gain free instant access to our video module training course called 5 Ways to Scale Your Real Estate Wholesaling Business to 6 Figures in 6 Months or Less. For more interviews, strategies, and insights for the smart real estate investor, we'll catch you next time here on the Flip Empire Show.